Hello and welcome back to Down the Slope. And as you can see, you've got four happy faces. I wonder why that is. I wonder what the common denominator is for the happiness on the podcast. No Hibs at the weekend. I suppose there was Hibs ladies playing, but they didn't have a great weekend out. Anyway, I am joined by the wonderful Ewan and Liam as always. And Chris, you've returned once again. We keep getting you on. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having me back.
No, it's a pleasure. All the listeners have been loving you as well, so it's great to have you, my friend. Ewan, you are on dog sitting duty this week.
Am. Yeah, Lauren's away in Spain with our mum, our gran, and our sister for the week, fucked off and left me behind. So I had her at the airport at 4 o'clock on Saturday morning, which wasn't so much fun. Getting up, but no, we're having a great time as I currently fight to get a ball out of the 6 months puppy mouth, and I am struggling. So yeah, move on.
Yeah, if you're struggling with the dog as much as you struggle to say that sentence, you are screwed. Liam, you're someone who has raised both dog and baby. What's more difficult?
It's not even a competition. Like, looking after the dog is a piece of piss in comparison. You realize how easy, I think being a parent, you realize just how easy that puppy stage was. Because at the time, you think the puppy stage is quite hard, particularly when they've got like the separation anxiety and stuff like that. But I think pretty early on into parenting, you realise it's a whole different ball game. And you actually, to be honest, you do get quite offended when people start to try and compare the two things and
It's
say,
funny, like, we were in the
he's a
car,
puppy, he's just the
before.
same. And I'm like, no, that's not
We were
right.
in the car
Okay.
before the St. John's thing game, and Liam was asking me how the dog was, and I think I said on three or four occasions, I was like, I'm not comparing it. Like, I'm not comparing it. Like, I'm not comparing it.
Oh, Chris, I know you've got a child. Have you got a pet as well?
No, goodness, no. Goodness, no.
Played it the safe way.
I've had pets before. I agree with Liam. It's not even a competition. You can't just leave a baby in the living room for 6 hours. Do you know what I mean?
Well, some do.
Well,
Okay, and well, now the fear of God is truly in myself and Ewan. Let's move into something else that gives us the fear, and that is Hibs managers. As we mentioned on last week's podcast, we're going to break down our top
Smooth.
five and bottom five Hibs managers of the 21st century. And you know, I like starting with the doom and gloom, so we're going to rock with the bottom five first. Just to say, from the list I've done, because I've kind of left this open to interpretation, we all have. I've kind of picked a mix, a blend between best and like best performing and my favorite, and then on the opposite side, I've put worst performing and like least favorite to kind of
Okay.
connect with, because I think that worst and best is just kind of, it's a murky area. There's not really
Subjective.
any black and white in it. So if you're listening and being like, how are these guys this wrong, then just keep that in mind.
Then fuck
Okay.
off and turn off.
Exactly. Yeah. We. Yeah. Get out of here. Anyway, you kick us off. Who's at number five and why? And sorry, just saying, we're starting with worst. Who's at number five, worst, and
My
why?
fifth worst, I don't know how that works as an English sentence, is Pat Fenlon, who got the nod for me ahead of a couple of others, just mainly because of, well, two stinkers, really. I think in generally done okay to bad somewhere, you know, like but you know, he came in a sort of relegation fight and got us out of that ultimately. And then the next season there was some good, some bad, ended up bottom six, and then he left with us in mid-table again. But yeah, a couple of significantly horrific results right in between all of that makes him make the list for me.
And just before we come on to next the comments onto that, has anybody else got Fenlon at five? All right, Chris, who have you got at five?
I this was a difficult one. I actually haven't decided. I've just got a gloop of managers in fifth. I could be controversial and say the current incumbent, but then you've got your Sean Maloney's, Paul Heckenbottom's. But I'm gonna I'm probably I'll give Montgomery a reprieve, and I'll go with Sean Maloney that I've got at fifth. I just I think he was just another manager who tried to fit square pegs and round holes and didn't do a very good job. And a lot of people kind of said, you know, more time, he deserves more time, or he would have been good if he would have worked it out if we'd given him more time. But he didn't get more time. So all we can judge him on is what he did. And it was pretty crap. When you've got Josh Campbell, like a deep line playmaker, you're not doing a good job, are you?
I'm genuinely shocked though that Montgomery didn't make the cut. I'll be completely honest. I'll come to you in a second, Liam. But Sean Maloney is also my number five, and I genuinely, it was a coin flip for me between him and Montgomery. Not because, like, it's similar to the Venti take I had a few weeks back. It's not because I think his tenure is going to last as terrible, but at the moment, I think he's got like a 2% better win percentage than Sean Maloney. I'm not too into stats, but yeah, I can definitely like see the argument. Liam, who have you got at five? And yeah, let us know.
I've got the Yorkshireman himself, Mr. Paul Heckenbottom, as fifth worst. Heckenbottom's kind of a weird one because we finished top six from, I suppose, when he came in, what looked maybe slightly improbable. And the vibes for a while under Heckey were quite good. And it was all anchored by really an exceptionally good song.
Oh, totally, yeah.
That created really good vibes. But I think if you look at the point from which we finished in the bottom six, or sorry, the top six onwards, it was all just really downhill. Now, he did give me a Derby Day victory on my 30th birthday, which was exceptional, but really, there were a lot of really stinking performances. Do you remember the game we went up to McDermott to beat St Johnston 2-1 and Omeonga slipped that through ball into the penalty? Like, we got battered by St Johnston that night. Like,
totally
battered by St Johnston, and then the whole League Cup debacle, it was just all really bad and playing guys out of position. And then the comments about, oh, didn't you realize you couldn't substitute Scott Allen, and the playing Scott Allen on the right wing, and just everything that happened at the beginning of that season. And I remember the strength of feeling had turned against them so much that, like, you just, it was probably worse even than Montgomery is now. And the fan base just wanted them gone. And I find him a thoroughly unlikable guy. And that's what this is down to for me. The recurring theme in this list is there's quite a lot of unlikable characters in my bottom five. And he is one of them, albeit not the worst.
He is much higher up my list.
I think, yeah. Heck,
much lower, you mean, Ewan?
Well, lower. Aye. No, he's second best.
Yeah. He's held in lower esteem. I think the problem with Heckenbottom for me was that it felt like the pitch was like a grid, and players were only allowed to go in certain parts of the pitch. You could almost see like the fullback sort of like doing the cartoon bit to stop going off the edge of a cliff when they got to like the halfway line. They weren't allowed to go over it. So it just felt really restrictive football. So I could have included them on the list, but nah, there's guys I don't like a lot more. So
he's not in your list at all.
He didn't make my list at all. Right. That's what I'm saying. He could have made it. He was in that group of managers that just could have went the fifth worst. Because
he started higher in my list, and then I let personal feeling sort of come into play, and he got moved lower.
Two stories on Heckenbottom. The St Johnston game you mentioned, after we scored the second goal, I think the McNulty one was the second goal, some guy ran on the pitch, ran in front of the goals, went like that in front of the keeper, then jumped on the pylon and managed to get back in the crowd. And he DM'd me after the game being like, oh, saw you at the game, would you be able to come to court and say that I didn't go on the pitch? And I was like, absolutely not, am I swearing under oath that you did not do something you 100% did on camera. So yeah, that was a quality day.
How do you know that that man is not currently still evading the authorities? Like, you just told that story.
That explains a lot of the hate comments on YouTube, Harry.
Yeah. Honestly, all the anonymous accounts that are after me call me Specky nonstop. It just must be the one guy. The one guy's called me Specky my whole life. And Chris, I know you've got one rival now on Twitter as well, but we can come to that story later on.
One.
Yeah. The guy was saying you were raging the other day. I was like, jeez. But you know, I'll kick off with my number four. I think he's going to be higher on other people's list. Just say I don't have Heckey in my group either. But I've got Lee Johnson at my number four. I think he kind of goes without saying as to why he didn't really connect well with the fan base. In short, he was a really weird guy. And secondly, 2-3-0 defeats in the space of like 2 weeks to Hearts, for me, That was the mo. Oh, another Heckenbottom. Sorry, I'm jumping back and forth. But Heckenbottom, the reason I knew he was sacked, mind we got pumped to Ibrox when we never used to get beat that badly by Rangers. As soon as that happened, they should just end
because
the fan base was just. I was actually gone at that point,
well, I think.
But everybody hated him after that. And Lee Johnson, for me, it just we could have won the league after January, and I still couldn't have taken to him. That January, just Lee Johnson's just not my person. I'm not his person. He's not my person. I'm happy at that. He's my number four. Liam, have you got Johnson at number four? And if not, who have you got?
I actually don't have Lee Johnson at number four first. I've got someone else who I think will probably be on your lists, but might have just evaded it because he was quite a middling manager, and that's the apparent toast lover, Bobby Williamson. I have him fourth bottom. I think that. His time at Hibs, he does deserve some credit for bringing through ultimately what led to there being a bit of a golden generation that followed him. So he does deserve a bit of credit. But I don't think you can look past that and just not recognise how shite we were for a huge amount of period. And we were essentially just a bottom six football club under Bobby Williamson. He had the most blown it of blown it moments as well against Livingston, the CIS Cup final, and I've talked about that before at length on this podcast and the effect that had on me as a young man and my experiences at Hibs going to Hampden. Just really not a good manager, and again in terms of likability, not likable. And I think the thing is, well, just one thing I was going to say about the golden generation, and I don't know if this is true, but there is a story that he did try to swap Derek Riordan for Bobby Mann from Inverness Cali Thistle, and I think throw cash into the equation as well.
Was it not Derek Riordan and Stephen Whittaker?
I didn't know it was both of them.
For Bobby Mann, yeah.
Now, I've seen Bobby Mann play football.
Is it so much due?
to call Bobby Mann agricultural would be probably not going far enough in terms of his characteristics as a footballer. You guys are probably still a wee bit too young, you and Harry, to remember that sort of first Inverness team that came up, but they essentially had guys like
Bruce
Ross, Ross Toakley and
I remember that,
boy McBain and Sunday Munro, and they were all big farmers. Like they were all probably a wee bit too fat to play professional football, but played professional football anyway, and most of their strength was in their upper body. And Bobby Mann was kind of cut from that cloth.
I don't have Bobby Williamson anywhere on my list. Should I justify it? So firstly, I don't think I've got the I seen 6 months of his football. I got my first season ticket as a half season ticket that January. Obviously, I was still just a kid at that point. And then I thought it was worthwhile to bring some element of fact and not just sort of opinion to it. So I reckon of all the managers that are going to feature in worst, before you would consider them for best, he actually has the best win record of all of them except Lee Johnson. So, like, for just some names that might feature here, better win record than John Hughes, Pat Fenlon, Paul Heckenbottom, you know, like Nick McGrimmie, Sean Maloney, Mixie Patalainen, and like, he's better win record than all of them. So, he just lost. He was the one that got taken out for Pat Fenlon to get put in and actually started even lower, hence when I said I moved Hecky down as well. I pulled him out maybe just because probably I don't have enough recollection of just how grim it was. And, you know, like, he was just coming to the end of it and that, and I just associate that period with being really excited by the likes of Riordan and O'Connor and stuff like that. As much as I know from other people's recollections and stuff that it was shit. Just, you know, when I have to think about what I can remember and then the facts that sort of go with it. So he just escaped. And, yeah. But much the same to Pat Fenlon, I would say. Came in a sort of relegation fight-ish. But I felt like there's probably less chance of us being relegated the season that Williamson took us over than Fenlon did. So maybe I should have went for Williamson. I don't know. It was really 50-50.
I think it was when Williamson came in, was it no Dunfermline that were bottom by like
St Johnston, I think. And
oh,
was
it
Dunfermline for Fenlon?
Right, aye. So, but because I remember when Williamson came in, he had to win like one of his first games, which was a big.
So I was reading today the game that Sozier got sat. St Johnston had just went to 9 behind us, and the next game was St Johnston. So
right.
I don't know if Williamson was in place for that game or not. But
I remember there being like a big relegation game at Easter Road.
It was St Johnston.
And I think we won 4-0 or 4-1 or something. We actually got a really good result when he first came in. But I had Williamson at number four as well, actually. I think, yeah, fair enough win rates, and he and by all accounts, he actually seems like quite a nice fella as well. I think he's done some really good interviews, and he's just a good football man. But yeah, when you're saying things like if Hibs fans want entertainment, they should go to the cinema. People remember that stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like that's not a good way to manage a football club, is to say that to the supporters. And yeah, the trying to get rid of the good players in exchange for guys like Bobby Mann, that's not good football management, in my opinion. And then he might have had a decent win rate, but he also bottled that final against Livingston, and the win rate was hardly,
No, it was, yeah, nothing is clean from the
And
room.
it's
Like,
probably boosted by bottom six finishes as well. Like,
well,
that gave yourself five
easier
easier
fixtures.
games. Like, the context there, I
I
think,
think
is
that he
it
was
was
cooking the books. He was cooking the
it was during a bit of
books.
a period of sort of financial, like, I wouldn't say turmoil, but like the financially a lot of Scottish clubs were in the similar boat as well. And he didn't really like take anything. He didn't really maximize that opportunity by making us a particularly good footballing team or like play the market in a way that really helped advance their cause. And I think a lot of that was probably down to the fact, I know he was, his hand was forced to play younger players, but I don't know if you remember some of the signings during his time were brutally, brutally bad, like that were like not even like close to being good enough for
Do
the
you
first
think
team.
he? Do you think there was? Obviously, you guys will be able to maybe think that. Do you think he suffered a bit that he obviously came in on the back of Frank Sausy, Harry, coming? Obviously, he got the sack very quickly, but it was obviously coming on the back of a sort of successful period under Alex McLeish as well. So when he comes out and makes comments like he did, does that get amplified as well? Because it's been a time of relative success for the club, Scottish Cup finals, third place finishes, obviously winning the third division late. Timing's a thing there as well, so he maybe doesn't get looked back on. I don't know, any of the people we'll mention get looked back on fondly, but there's maybe not too much difference between what he done at the club and, well, the person that I'm going to mention in fourth.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Williamson was a wee bit lucky to have the players coming through that he did as well. Because he certainly had nothing to do with their development. He kind of came in just as
Aye,
they were ready to
ready to
become
go.
first team players, which is yeah, quite lucky, and probably a contributor to that win rate.
A middling manager for a time of transition. That's probably.
And he didn't really go about it very well, I don't think. And
No.
I mean, I don't really hold any ill will to him now, but at the time, I remember thinking, I just didn't like this guy.
He wasn't liked. He was not liked right from the start. And I think he made some sort of comment in the media about him not being liked because he was a Hun, basically, or words to that effect. And it kind of just, a lot of people didn't really take that particularly well. He also signed Colin Murdoch.
That's right.
He scored in that League Cup semi-final. He scored his pen. That's all that matters.
And Roland Edge. I don't know if you remember the left back, Roland
Yeah, of
Edge.
course, sorry. Who can forget
Brutal.
Roland Edge?
I just feel traumatized just listening to whatever's going on here. I was going to put him in because I remember my dad really didn't like Bobby Williamson, but I
So
literally couldn't tell you anything about
was
him.
he just before your time, Harry, then, or like
Yeah, I
what?
think like how what year was it he was in charge roughly? He
02,
left in
03 to 04.
We're talking I'm being like 4 or 5, so
Right,
yeah,
okay.
I really can't comment.
Every time I come on this podcast, I feel older and older every time.
Oh no. That's Hibs. That's not us. That's Hibs.
True.
But one thing I will say though is managers that like, because nowadays the reason that Lee Johnson got so much notoriety amongst the Hibs fans is because social media will amplify everything that you say. Whereas that, like, if you want entertainment, you go to the cinema. This is like 20 years on.
Yeah, he
And
got
I
away with
know
it.
that quote. Like I wasn't even aware of the guy when I was 5, but I know the quote now. Like, he's transcended his time. But Ewan, you said you've got a different number four.
I can guarantee nobody will have him in the top five, and I feel really bad for it.
Bottom five, Ewan.
It's
Ewan's really
bottom five.
struggling to figure out how
Sorry,
this
bottom
concept
five. We'll get
works.
him there. We'll get him there. Surely the worst, it can still be a top five of
No, it
worst
can't.
All right,
It
it's
can't.
wrong. Anyway.
Miksu Pätiläinen is fourth for me. Really, really, and I don't like it. We obviously had a nice conversation with him in January. Really, really nice guy. There's probably some mitigating circumstances for it, but I think he still had a decent side. Back-to-back sixth place finishes and potentially the start of what was to come over the next sort of 10 years.
Maybe
potentially it comes a year later, you know, under John Hughes, or even 6 months later under John Hughes after we're sitting second at Christmas time. But just, I think back-to-back sixth place finishes doesn't have a good win record. I still think we had some decent players at the time, you know, like players like Dennis Rosser, briefly Liam, but like Stephen Fletcher's still there, and he rubbed up, you know, the falls out with Benji and loads of different stuff. But just, I think, 2 sixth place finishes in a row, scraping into the top six on both occasions, you know, does a point either way. And he's Bobby Williamson. You know, like it's that sort of, but without that good feeling of him as a player. It's maybe harsh, but...
But we also played some quite wild football under Mixu as well. I was talking today in the group chat about this and chucking names out and stuff. And folk were saying, mind when did we not start playing like 4-2-4?
4-2-4 for a quite long period.
Yeah. Like it was like, say, you can kind of say what you like about like,
see, I associate like the
stats and stuff, but that's inherently just more exciting, isn't it?
Recall that period of time being that entertaining. I remember the 4-2-4 as being with John Hughes when he's brought, you know, but I just think, you know, Mixu managed to have Stephen Fletcher on his side, Derek Riordan on his side, like some decent play. Dean Shields was still there, at least in his first season. You know, like there was still a core of decent players. Sol Bamba, I think, came in his second year. Like, I think, ultimately, I think he didn't succeed. I think, yeah, look, we spoke to him and he wanted to do something different. He did, and I appreciate that. But I think back-to-back sixth place finishes, when Harry's putting Lee Johnson in there, who finished fifth in his only season, like, you know, there is obviously a likability thing to this, and it is massive in football fans. We are that fickle. But yeah, I felt it would, he was worth a mention at least.
So just one challenge to you in terms of Mixu against the one you've just put in, Paddy Fenlon. Do you think that Mixu finishing six back to back is worse than getting beat 5-1 off Hearts in a cup final?
I think Pat Fenlon had a harder set of circumstances to deal with. Harry, he comes into a team that are sitting second bottom, and you know, like the only reason Fenlon's in my bottom five is the 2 results, like against Malmo and Hearts. Like he came in, avoided the drop the second season. God, after 12 or 13 league games, we were sitting top. Now, obviously, as per usual with Hibs, we crumbled and actually managed to finish in the bottom six. But again, and then, so yeah, no, I think. Fenlon's one full season in charge, and the sort of start of the next season, he's sitting sixth when he leaves. Like, I don't see there to be that too many dissimilarities between the two, albeit Mixu maybe didn't take the total embarrassments, but I think he had a better set of cards to play with.
My mitigation for Mixu, and the reason I don't have him included, is my take on him is that he was a victim of John Collins' absolutely shoddy recruitment. Some of the players that he got stuck with, like Alan O'Brien, Patrick Nabise, Mikel Antoine Courier, Thierry Gattuso, like the squad needed gutted when he came in, because John Collins did not know how to go and sign and attract decent caliber players. His signings were atrocious, and you think about some of the money that we invested, even the goalkeeper Makalambi, like the money that we invested, Mixu got left with a terrible squad. And then Mixu came in the January, and I think the first 2 signings he made were the earlier mentioned Dennis Rosa and Shamatulski, the former Dundee United goalkeeper and goals. Yeah. And we improved, not considerably, but we did improve under Mixu, and that's initially we got a bit of a jolt out of the two of them. But I couldn't have Mixu in my bottom five.
What were Mixu's like big results? Did he get any big results?
I think was he in charge for the Celtic game when we beat them 2-0 at Easter?
Was that
Squiggler?
But other than that, that's again, like, you know, I think he had a very bad Derby record.
As a manager.
I no yeah I That was it. Yeah, I was just trying to think. You know, you're like we spoke about Nick Montgomery needing signature wins and stuff. That period under Mixer, I think maybe it's similar to what I said about Williamson as well. The way like what Liam said, like we were coming off a good period there as well, where Mowbray had been in for a couple of years, and Collins obviously done what he done, but we did win the League Cup. So maybe, you know, it was another transition period, and maybe back-to-back top six finishes at that time shouldn't be sniffed at. But just, yeah, I don't know. I just thought maybe a bit more.
Also win a derby at Tynecastle with a midfield of Ross Chisholm, Joe Keenan, Alan O'Brien, and I think John Rankin was the fourth for.
Well, I think Lewis Stevenson definitely.
Some of the
midfields
we have had that have lost derbies. Jesus. How that midfield four in Tynecastle and won. Like, genuinely, someone should write a thesis on that.
Lewis Stevenson definitely played that night, because that's where that picture of him like down laughing in Michael Stewart's face. I'm sure that was from that evening.
They were all left-footed. I remember they were all left-footed.
Who was the manager? No, I don't know what to ruin anything, obviously, if this is another one, but who was the manager with when Det Ryders scored the penalty? And
Mixer, that was that night.
That was that night.
Yeah. Is that the game that you were just talking about there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aye, because that whole team was diabolical, wasn't it, really?
I think Fletcher and Rowden still started up front, and then right. It was everything else that went on behind them. Right, that's really...
That was a wee bit of a kind of a feature of Hibs for a while. The guy up front, then all the shit that's going on behind him. Hi, I'm Lee Griffiths. I'm just going to be scoring all the goals.
Right. do you know the
Who
most...
Who cares what's going on back there?
The most remarkably average player that managed to play almost every game that season. Do you remember David Van Zanten at right back? Now, Mix, you did sign him in fairness, probably one of the most average Joe footballers I've ever seen play for Hibs.
It was St Mirren we signed him from, wasn't it?
It was, buddy. And that's what I was going to say. It was a signing at the time. That
he's a bit of a cult hero there, eh?
Yeah, I remember my dad being like, we've signed like a good one there. Like, he's had done really well at St Mirren and that, but, stinking.
Other points off for Mix, you have to go for him playing Jonathan Johansson is a right winger for the second half of that season, almost every game. Jonathan Johansson, who couldn't run anymore on the right wing.
Harry, Liam signed them up. He's fourth. That's it, done.
Okay. Chris, kick us off. Let's enter the top three, Chris. Who have you got at three?
Bottom three.
Top of the bottom six.
The third worst I've got. I've got Pat Fenlon up there. I know there's an argument that he actually did quite well outside of the really bad results. However, the really bad results happened and reparations need to be paid, Pat. So you're the third worst manager in Hibernian history to me. Not Hibernian history, in 21st century. Because I was actually thinking about this. If it was like my lifetime, I was like, well, Jim Duffy's got to be up there, surely. I had a look at his win rate. It's like
20%. Yeah, it's terrific.
But anyway, I think, yeah, the problem with looking back at stuff is, unless you do want to actually get down into the nuts and bolts and the statistics of how it all happened, it is the memorable moments. That's really what you've got to go on. And unfortunately, Fenlon's got some really, really bad ones. The worst, possibly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, it is. Like, there's no getaway from that. So, I would say that so far I would be happy to swap Fenlon and Mixer, but neither are making my top, my bottom three.
Right, okay.
Liam,
I was saying this before we went on air. I'd be shocked if the top two aren't pretty unanimous.
Yeah.
But carry on.
Liam, who's your number three? Have you got the same?
No, my number three is the recently, or fairly recently, departed Lee Johnson.
Oh, what's your reasoning?
So I think in terms of league finish and position, he obviously does not rank amongst the people in the bottom five up until this point. But I think you have to look at the level of investment in the squad, which Fenlon, Mixu, none of these guys had that level of investment in the first team. I've never seen someone make as much of an arse of a first transfer window when they've gone into football club as Lee Johnson. He literally signed like 16 guys and then proceeded to use about two of them once he'd figured them out. And in terms of likability, I remember you and Harry, not a diggies out, but I remember you went to the sort of But podcasts always get asked to go and speak to the new manager when he comes in, and 2 years came away being like, oh, he's brilliant. He talks so well. I can't honestly, when you hear this guy's philosophy on football, he talked about this 4-8-8-4 thing and, you know, all the stuff he was hitting out with. And I listened to the interview and I thought, oh, well, I can kind of see where they're coming from, you know, I can kind of see where they're coming from. But that, you're going to get really fucking tired of that very, very quickly. And I did. By the time we played Kilmarnock just before the World Cup, went through Rugby Park and watched us lose in a really abject performance, I wanted them gone. And I think it's the fact that he stayed so long after I wanted them gone that really made me dislike him so much, which is why Lee Johnson is in my bottom three, because I don't like the guy in any level or any capacity, and I don't think he's a particularly competent manager.
That is fair. I hate Harry. Don't you just hate it as well when, like, you know, 2 years down the line and Liam just goes, oh, remember that time?
Just to justify it, I still remember the things that impressed me was, one, we said to him, what are you going to do? And he actually explained how he was going to attack and how he was going to, like, because all these managers, never like, they never actually give any form of detail, but he actually gave it. And I was like, you know what, at least he's being open about it. And then also, it was like, I know that Hibs have got like a really great fan base here in Edinburgh, and obviously they've got their Irish roots. And I was like, I like a guy that'll do a bit of reading before he comes on the fan podcast. And that's another thing, I thought the fact that he actually engaged with us, because that's one thing that obviously that's just me being selfish, but I thought it was nice that he actually wanted to like connect with different avenues and stuff.
And I think Harry's position did change, because the next time he spoke to him, he said, so why did you not get sacked?
Yeah, to his face, I wasn't backing out of that. No, it should have been ridiculous. But Ewan, who have you got number three?
Oh, sorry, Chris, do you want to have
Chris.
No, I was just going to say about Johnson. I think it's just that I've got a terrible perversion that I actually don't mind him. I think it's because I was so like, I don't know, I remember the interview you're talking about. I think was it on this podcast?
It was like us and an artist.
Oh, that's right. Because I listened to it and I remember thinking it was really like, oh no, when somebody asked him like, what team do you watch now in the world and think like, that they're great, I love to watch them, whatever. And I think his answer was the City group. I was like,
yeah,
that was like a wee bit like, oh, just say Atletico Madrid or something, man. Like, say Dortmund, fuck's sake. But anyway, he said stupid stuff, but once you started to embrace the stupid stuff, I actually quite liked the way that Hibs played under Johnson. I didn't like the way he defended, and particularly the way he defended cross balls, but yeah, I think, and again, in terms of moments, he gave us more moments than a lot of managers did. You know, like that night in Switzerland, Derby win, yeah, the home leg, the post split fixtures. When we scraped into the top six, we had quite a good finish to the season.
Yeah,
could have been better. So that kind of maybe saved a wee bit, because I was probably the same as everybody else in the January, being like, if he goes now, I don't really care. But he ended up kind of turning it around, and obviously I think with what we've got in the building now, his personality doesn't seem so alienating anymore. It actually seems almost quite warm in comparison. But that maybe that's just there.
I do find Lee Johnson, I can't think of any other Hibs manager off the top of my head where they have so, if you want, you could pick a side of the fence and you could say, what about this result for both sides.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is just whether you take time or not. Like Liam, Liam was pretty steadfast in his opinion on it throughout. You know, you never really warmed to him. It took you a while to get on board. He started okay. You know, the League Cup was bad, but the league form picked up a little bit. And then even, you know, but then when he speaks as much as he does, things come back to haunt you. He says, judge me after 12 games. But see, if he'd said, judge me after 8 games, it'd look really good, because we'd just won X amount in a row. But by the time the 12th game came around, we'd started the first day's nice little losing runs that went 3 or 4 in the spin. And yeah, just didn't make my list. But, you know, if it was purely dislike, then he's up there.
The two Derby defeats in January back to back are all time are bad moments for a Hibs manager.
Yeah, they are.
Like, there should never have been any, not to go over again, but there should never have been any coming back from that. Like, that should have been Jotter's time. I think ultimately what I boil it down to is I just don't like sleazy men, and he's a sleazy man. So for me, he has to be bottom three.
I mean, one thing I would say is I could always watch his kind of pre and post match interviews. I can't and I don't watch the stuff now that Hibs put out. So I don't know where that ranks in terms of like engagement or like connection with the team or whatever, because if I see anything from the current Hibs manager, I just scroll past it. I don't even watch it.
The only thing I'd say though, that's because Lee Johnson is a meme in himself. Like, he is literally like a real life David Brent. So he is so watchable because it's like someone's written him. Like, the things he comes out with, like,
I guess
5-0 at home and he's talking about, oh yeah, it's like I've driven to work and they put me in an F1 car. I don't know what to do. It's like, shut up. What? Mental. But yeah, we could talk about Lee Johnson and his stories and him for the rest of time. But Ewan, kick us off with your number three.
So yeah, my number three is Paul Heckenbottom.
Okay.
He left us in a pretty bad position. Came in and did get that initial boost. Did results mask the performance? Maybe, but we won the games, and like Liam said earlier, there was good vibes aplenty, especially coming out of that derby win. And very quickly after that, the wheels did start coming off. Obviously drew with that Hearts side in the split, and I don't think we won a game in the split. And then Harry, you mentioned it earlier, I think it was the second game of the season, we went to Ibrox and got absolutely hammered. And my personal favourite, Sean Mackey, got sent off at 2-1 for a handball. And then, yeah, it was horrendous from there. And I think for me, what tips him over the previous two is, one, the situation he left us in the league, and just the fact that that team overnight, when he left, improved. We won our next game 4-1. Jack Ross came in pretty quickly and, you know, started to improve things. We moved up the table a little bit to the point that when the season finished, we were sitting in the top six. Obviously, it ends up as a seventh place because we chose to have a laugh, which is always the correct option, and we get Hearts relegated. Had that season not finished, I think that team probably would have went on to finish above sixth. You know, I think there probably would have been enough in the tank now to carry on, although we had a couple of stinky results there against Hearts and Aberdeen right before the lockdown. Just in true Hibs fashion, you're not going to see us again for months and months and months, so we'll leave you with two all-time shiters. But no, I think the team that he had should have done better. He probably should have done better even in that top six when you get into that position. But I think he left us something like second bottom, having won one game or something, which was the first game of the season. Not a good manager. Although I think some players have actually come out and said he was like an incredible coach. I think Marvin Bartley and Lewis Stevenson maybe both said it on Longbangers when he was speaking to Matty and the guys, and said he was a very, very good coach. But yeah, not for me. Just a bit of a disaster, really.
I still remember it was John Yule away to Elgin. He actually had a really good performance, but he played him at left wing.
Same against Sterling Albion as well.
I've just never really been able to forgive that, to be honest. But as Liam said, I think...
I saw them... It might have been Joe Newell's first game at East End Park in a friendly. Yeah,
is that the one where we were a walk outside for like 20 minutes trying to get in? Dunfermline can be that way at times.
Yeah, it was that.
It took ages to get in. Yeah, I remember that one, and I remember seeing Joe Newell out wide. I mean, you didn't really know at the time, being like, why is Joe Newell out wide? You were just like, this guy's quite crap.
It was Joe Newell said on here, like him and Christian Doige, like whether it was the manager hadn't told them or their agent hadn't told them or whatever, but they didn't actually know they were coming in to play games that quickly. Christian Doige was signed in like the June. Why was he not told? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying it's the manager's fault, but like, surely to Christ, someone told him the games come that quickly. But hey ho, not for me, Harry. I think he is. Did Chris and Liam, did you both have him at five? I think he's a little bit worse than that.
I think I'm Liam. Did you give your three? Yeah.
Yeah, I've gone, so just to recap, I've gone Heckenbottom, Williams, and then Johnson.
And Chris, you've gone?
I've gone, a group of managers at five, but I pinpointed Maloney Then I've gone Williamson and then Fenlon.
Ewan?
Initially, it was Fenlon mixed with Heckenbottom, but I think I've been swayed to go mixed with... I'll stick with it. I see Liam shaking his head already. Fenlon mixed with Heckenbottom.
Hey, and I'm last one to reveal the three. And I think I would be surprised if he wasn't on all your guys, but I've got fifth Maloney, fourthly Johnson, and third, I think potentially the worst and most boring football in the history of Hibernian Football Club, Colin Calderwood. Honestly, like, I don't like to bash individuals, but as a person, I thought he was the opposite of charisma, whatever that word is. I think in terms of the style on the pitch, it emulated him as a person.
For what it's worth, he's my least favourite Hibs manager of the 21st century. A guy who was just openly taking a wage. He wasn't interested. He didn't want to be there. He admitted afterwards, he's like, I just couldn't pick a team. I mean, he was just awful. And we were talking earlier about the start of the death spiral. I think that was the real start of the death spiral, where there was just no recovering from it. The apathy of with the fans had really set in. Crowds were going down. The football was awful. I think there was only one way it was going to end, really.
I think that, like, I still remember how empty Easter Road used to be when he was manager. Like, nobody wanted to go. Like, well, when we come on to our top five, like, I remember certain managers I would love to go and, like, think of them in the dugout and be all excited. But as a, like, growing up, kind of, like, mid-kid, like, approaching teenage years, I just couldn't stand Calderwood. Yeah. I just didn't take to him at all. And so he's my number three. As I say, I'm sure you guys have got him somewhere. So I'll kick off number two. This is controversial because I don't dislike him as a person. I actually really like him, and I thought personality wise he was all right, but just some of the signings, mental, and the worst result in the club's history. Pat Fenlon's at number two for me. I completely understand not even having him in your worst five, but for me, I just, when I was ranking and I saw the names, I just thought 5-1. I just thought I can't not have him in it. I think I've got a very obvious number one now. But yeah, Pat Fenlon for me, you just...
I think we all do.
The picture of the five signings with him, like the five loan signings at the end of January and him, and it's just one of the worst images of all time. It's just ingrained in my head. So Pat, I don't dislike you as a person. I think you're all right. But as a manager, please don't come near Hibernian Football Club again.
I think it's just harsh to put him worse than Calderwood, because I think to an extent he's even tidying up Calderwood's mess.
But I think
Calderwood starts it, like, you know, I know it sounds so, so defeatist in that, but if Fenlon lost the semi-final to Aberdeen, people would have went into that summer and went, you know, he's actually done a decent job. He's came in and stopped us from being relegated, which was a very real proposition. And, you know, he had a decent run in the cup, because I remember it was Kilmarnock at home in one of the earlier rounds, and we beat them. Maybe that was quarterfinals, I think, Cowden Beef, maybe, because Lee Griffiths got suspended for telling his own fans to fuck off or something, I'm sure, after they scored. But, you know, it is context, Harry, and, you know, you can't ignore the results. But to put him below Calderwood is... that's a big one for me. But then again, I've got Mixon in my five, so who am I to talk?
Calderwood with a random 3-0 win at Ibrox as well.
That's the thing as well. Like,
it's literally all he has in the plus column.
Because that's the thing as well. When I was thinking about it, because that's when I always laugh, because obviously it's just ridiculous, because that team was absolutely abhorrent, and somehow Calderwood, who was absolutely abhorrent, like, oversaw that. Did Fenlon have like a marquee win? Did he have a win that you can look back at and be like, wow, that was awesome? Because I can't think of anything.
For vibes, the Kelly away in the Scottish Cup.
True. The League of Football.
For vibes. Fenlon had the derby win, Ross Caldwell as well. He had the 4-0 against Dunfermline the season.
4-3 against
we were going to go down. We were 3-0 up after like 20-odd minutes.
I
think Fenlon had a few good moments, to be fair. And I don't have Fenlon in my bottom five, and part of that is purely down to vibes. I liked him. I've got Calderwood second bottom, but for many of the same reasons that other people have talked about. I think Chris kind of summed it up perfectly when he said, you know, he didn't want to be here, and he very much gave off that vibe. Hibs had the opportunity, I think, in the summer as well to offload him to Birmingham City, I'm right in saying, for $300,000.
He'd be like an assistant or something.
Chris Hughton's assistant, I think, maybe again, and we turned it down and we kept him. It was just a really, really badly thought it moved. There was no way that he should have stayed. He very shortly after joining, he had a 10-game winless run, which I don't know if you remember it. It was like games where we were losing like 3-0, 2-0, 4-1. The games weren't close, and we didn't really get any manager bounce from him coming. I think the overriding thing for me was on the day he was announced, I got a text saying that Steve Clarke was going to be announced and it was all signed, sealed, and delivered. And when Colin Calder walked into that room, I've never been more disappointed in my cream puff, because what you got with Steve Clarke and his CV versus what you got with Colin Calder and his CV was night and day.
I think I remember it quite. This is probably coming into like, peak vivid memories in terms of age and stuff. I remember it was either going into the bottom six or after the last game of the season, and Hibs really basically released a statement where Petrie said Calderwood's our guy, and it was like, oh, okay. And then we're talking about media things. Was it the Blackpool friendly? And he's talking about the bag of treats on Sky Sports after the game. Like, yeah, bad, real bad. And
We went
only
into the summer having lost like six games in a row or
I
something
mean,
as well.
look, I
Like,
want to say,
brutal. Like,
yeah, Liam, I want to
brutal.
say that statement came after the season, after we had just like stunk out the bottom six, like entirely, like not even like maybe we'll do the same this year, but like just
Well,
totally.
that there could be a manager shooting up the list, by the way, if we didn't, if something goes wrong in the next five games. But yeah, no, anyway, what I was going to say about Calderwood just quickly is that I think memory plays such a huge part in this and how you remember, because my memory of Calderwood being the Hibs manager was that every game took place at night in the winter.
Reason.
Yeah, freezing. There's like no games in the summer that I remember when Colin Calderwood was manager. It was just always the depths of winter. So that's obviously like a kind of mind trick
Oh, do
that
you know
my
what though?
memory
You're
is
right.
there anyway.
You are right though. And like that season, like it was the first stand at the East Stand, first season the East Stand had been opened as well, like you say, Harry. Nae cunt wanted to be there. It was a shell, it was a shite kit. It was the most basic bog standard Puma hang in the
Yeah,
world.
the
Like,
Puma one,
it
yeah.
was just shit. It was just utter shit, only to be made worse, Harry, by, I'm assuming, the universal number one that we all have.
Yeah, I mean it
Yeah.
can't be anywhere. It can't be anywhere else, can it?
Chris, you kick us off. You kick us off. Terry Butcher, Jesus fucking Christ.
Mm.
Jesus. Jump scare.
Yeah, he just came in and he I think he tried. I think he just tried something. And what he thought that reaction that he thought he was going to get from the players, and how he was going to, be this kind of drill sergeant and like not treat them as as like a friend. He was going to be like a really authoritative, and it just backfired. It just backfired in such a huge way. Alienated the entire squad, abused some of them, if you listen to the stories. I just a complete catastrophe. One of those sliding doors moments, of course, because if we'd stuck with Fenland, we don't get relegated. But if we don't get relegated, does all the stuff that happened after we got relegated happen? I don't know. But yeah, the Terry Butcher experiment, just an absolute car crash of an appointment. Yeah, like I said, I think he came in and he had this idea of how he was going to do it. It just failed so miserably.
Yeah. I don't know if there's really a huge amount more I can add to that other than just how we finished the season. Like, he'd basically told guys who he then later upon relied on that they were surplus to requirements. It's probably one of the worst examples of man management you'll ever see in football. Telling guys that
Yeah.
you're no longer required and then you're thrust into a relegation playoff and all of a sudden I need you to play 90 minutes in probably the most cut and thrust game of the season. Everything about him was bad. The recruitment in January, the defense was probably less of an issue. I think we kept like maybe four or five clean sheets in a row quite early on after they joined. So he deemed that to be less of an issue and went out and got Danny Haynes, Duncan Watmore, and I can't remember who the other one was in the January, and they were terrible. Like Duncan Watmore, I think, got injured quite early on, to be fair, so I wouldn't, and he's gone on to have an okay career, which suggests
Yeah.
that he might not have been that bad a signing, but Danny Haynes was
Does he
brutal.
not get hooked
Was it
after like
Daniel Boateng?
15 minutes? And yeah, Daniel
Daniel
Boateng in
Boateng. Yeah.
January. Did
Oh.
Danny Hayes not get did he not get hooked after like 15 minutes in the game against Hamilton at home as well? Like, he took like the most innocuous of knocks and just it was like, you just didn't want to be there.
Didn't fancy it.
He put so much pressure on youngsters as well. Like Jason Cummins, I think he forced Alex Harris back pretty quick, put the weight of the world on his shoulders. And although, to be fair,
I think his relationship with Alex Harris was one of the probably the nadir, I think, of his entire tenure. If you believe what you hear, and I've got no reason to disbelieve it, I've got friends or family that are kind of know Alex Harris and his family a bit, and yeah, there's truth in what happened. It was
Kevin Thompson spoke about it on the Ramble with their interview a couple of weeks ago as well, and like I find it interesting, Harry, that you know Owen Tudor Jones, obviously signed for us from Inverness, but Kevin Thompson said basically that Owen Tudor Jones was like, why the fuck are we bringing him in? Basically, when it was like a player that's actually excelled under him was like, not sure about that. I think that tells you everyone, you know. And do you know, I don't know if it's a shame or not, but a lot of players obviously got let go by him in the days leading up to his sacking, and I'm not sure that any of them would have deserved to be kept on or should have been kept on, but ultimately it wasn't his decision, or shouldn't have been his decision to make that decision, you know, like, and it just totally ruined this football club 6 months.
And the most Hibs thing to have ever happened,
along with others, by the way.
Yeah, the opportunity to go to Tynecastle and have the best day ever. We relegate literal children who are wearing Hearts kits, and we somehow get beat whilst before the game we've put out flyers with TB Gawa, and we somehow go there and get papped about the place by a bunch of 16 to 18 year olds. It's just embarrassing, boys. It's just embarrassing. And then the Hamilton...
Hamilton game was awful.
I was playing a gig. I was playing a gig that night with my band, the home leg, and I watched it downstairs in a pub in Kilmarnock. Like, you think of a worse place to watch a Hibs lose a penalty shootout to get relegated?
Yeah, Easter Road.
The worst thing is, if you watch the game back, you can hear the Hibs fans singing "Couldn't Carry Nadi" as he smacks it in and makes it 1-0.
Oh, well, that's the thing, mate, as well. Like, you were literally seconds away. Like, it wasn't as if it was like two early goals. It was one early goal, and then they scored in injury time. You know, it was the stadium. I'd thought we'd got over the line in that sense, but no, it was peak Hibs.
Can I just say one last thing on him? And I think he is the embodiment of why fans should not decide who the next manager is, because I think he was almost unanimously by Hibs supporters wanted as the next manager, and we could not have got it more wrong.
Petrie trumpeting him in, calling him a leader of men as he just fucking holds 18-year-old Alex Harris up against the wall by his throat.
Superb. Well, boys, superb. What a time.
This was supposed to be our week to detox from Hibs, and my God, we are detoxing. But okay, we've done our five managers. We'll give you a reminder at the end of the episode of who we've picked for that. But let's go on top five best managers from. So we're doing it from 1st of January 2000, so at the time from Alex McLeish up until now, when Nick Montgomery is in charge. I'll get the ball rolling. I don't think he's in it. Made any of our fives. I've started with, probably just because he won a cup and because he's just a pretty cool dude, I love John Collins.
Yeah, I've got
I love him. Mm-hmm. Like, I know he'd done a few things wrong in his time, but he was one of those guys. I don't think the brand of football was terrible, and obviously he had a team and he got them playing some really, really nice stuff. I love John Collins. He's my number five, and I'm happy that he's there.
Yeah, he's my five too.
He's my five as well. I think he was probably a bit, maybe not before his time, but certainly. The Hibs squad wasn't ready for somebody like that, I don't think, at that time. I think if circumstances had been different, then he could have actually maybe gone on and done something for a while at Hibs and then somewhere else. But I don't know. Maybe kind of wasn't cut out for it. He's not done anything since, has he? So
maybe his own personality is.
Yeah, maybe it is just a bit too abrasive or whatever, but Because he certainly rubbed some players up the wrong way. That's for sure. Again, you hear all the stories about him getting his six pack out and stuff. But yeah, I mean, he won the League Cup, and we played really fucking well in the final.
They
We
did.
scored we scored
Oh,
that great, we
absolutely,
scored
yeah.
that great goal with the third man running and stuff. Like that's just really good stuff. That's like legendary Hibernian stuff. We don't win a lot of trophies, so you have to enjoy it. And we certainly don't win a lot of trophies like that. Like where
Yeah.
you absolutely dominate the final and
We started that season very well as well. We went to Tynecastle in the Brian Kerr game where he scores really
yeah,
early
that's
on,
true. The
and we went
following,
on a
yeah.
run. I think they had maybe what 9 or 10 game unbeaten run at the start of the season. He got quite a lot of some players as well, like Chris Killen. He got more out of Chris Killen than anyone, I think, got out of Chris Killen in his career. He wasn't. I don't think the football was ever. It never really matched that final against Kilmarnock in terms of the quality of football, but there were some signature wins. The 3-2 against Celtic at Easter Road. I think that was the one where they unfurled the feeder club banner, wasn't it? So that was a
It
nice bit of
was, yeah.
Schadenfreude to get that. But I think the thing is with Collins, I think it was like they were always on the verge of something, but never quite achieved it. And I think ultimately his poor recruitment was what meant he didn't achieve perhaps what he could have at Hibs.
He signed Torben John Elite.
Was
Who
he
could have
not
been
supposed to
brilliant?
be though, like the next big thing? Or not that big, but like, was he not supposed to, like, it was like he was tipped to be great? Like, maybe I made that up, but I just. Did he also
As
sign
a lot of Hibs
David
players, as a
Croft?
lot of players that come to Hibs and do fuck all are.
Yeah, that's true. Did he sign David Groff as well? Who. Harry, is it you that's got the funny story about David Groff? No, I
No,
remember
it's
you.
me.
Oh, is
I'm
it?
not repeating it.
No, that's okay.
I've not heard it. You can tell me privately.
Sorry, Liam. He didn't make my list, right? And when I was doing my list, I accepted that I will be contradicting myself by not putting him in later on, which is an insight, I suppose. Yeah, just didn't make it. Probably more for league form than anything else. But I have to say that was, well, up until another day. The one of like it's such a happy memory, you know. Like I was 10 years old. Sorry, Chris. I know you'll be feeling a bit older again, but
For sake.
like I was 10 years old, and I'm thinking, God, Hibs win a that's just a piece of piss. This, you know what I mean? Like I've support at this point. Let's say I got my first season ticket under the last wee bit of Williams, and I've just watched Tony Mowbray for 2 years, and now we're in a trophy. Fuck,
Yeah.
this is some good shit. This,
It's kind of,
but,
that's kind of like maybe the generation after you that kind of missed the
Oh yeah.
relegation that and then started watching us in the championship. We were really good. Then we won the cup. Then we came up and then we were really good after that.
Yeah.
I kind of just wanted to be like, fuck yous. Fuck yous.
I
This
feel
is
like
not what
myself.
it's like.
I feel like myself and Harry, we got that little taste of a high, and then
Yeah,
we just went through school just getting like absolutely battered for
yeah.
the 6 years that I spent in high school. Was perfectly finished with that relegation. That was the summer I left school.
Yeah, right.
Like that we went and you know like
Nice.
that transition through six years of high school was like I've just got progressively shite and culminated with that. But my fifth Noble for a fact be higher up Liam's list, almost certainly be higher up Chris's list. And Harry, I don't know if you'll have him. My fifth is Alex McLeish. Maybe a little bit because of what I remember. And as everyone gave their fifth, maybe I could give my fourth at the same time as everyone.
Can I
Yeah,
just
go
jump
for
in
it.
on fifth? Because I think that having Alex McLeish at fifth is fucking stupid. I think if you're having him, he should be a lot
Yep.
higher. But I didn't put him on my list on the basis that I think I was
Yeah.
like 2 months old when he got appointed.
So
So
it's objective for
you're no
me.
longer allowed to say how old you were when things
I
happened,
know.
right?
So it's
I know, that's
objective for me, right?
plenty.
Now, the reason that I'll have him fifth is. I looked at his, and this is probably because I never seen it, so that's fair, right? But my fourth is Neil Lennon, and I have Lennon above him because I think they had very similar tenures. They both won the championship first division. They then followed it up with a very good top flight season, in which Lennon got a point more, just our best ever points tally. And then the season they left, when they left, it was nowhere near as good.
Yeah, they floundered a bit.
So,
McLeish
like.
definitely did.
Yeah, so I think he was eighth when we left. I think we're sitting sixth or seventh when Lennon left, much the same, right? Mm. So I've put Lennon purely just above because he got a point more, and it is literally the best points total we've ever got in a 38 game season. So I think that's worth a mention. And ultimately, I watched it. So that's my five and four, and I just thought it was right, Harry, to sort of put them together.
I'll just jump in quickly to say I've also got Neil Lennon four for me.
Yeah, so nice.
And the main reason is after he got his signings in January, that is still, in terms of length of time, the most like prolonged period of enjoyment I've had watching Hibs. I think the style of football, I don't think has ever looked better. I think some of the games that we had in that, like the 5-5 game, the 5-3 game, like, it was just class. There was just so much fun to be had when Neil Lennon was manager. And then obviously he was Bromby when we went over there as well. And then I know it's the Championship, so we don't really count it, but he still won something. And I just, like, if we compare him to the managers that were on our worst five list, he just has such a great personality. Like, you could tell if something was going wrong for Hibs, Neil Lennon would be there ready to fight anybody and everybody at any given time. And I don't think we've had that in a manager in a very long time. And I think that's great. And
He'd be there ready to fight until he was ready to just fuck off. That's one thing that you have to... There is definitely a point.
And that's
where
that's
like,
why he's not higher. That's why he's not higher. Yeah.
I mean, I think the Neil Lennon football, and certainly after the high of winning the cup, you kind of thought like, where do we go from here? How can we? I'm like, we still need to get out of the Championship, but it was kind of like, is it just going to be back to like grinding out wins in the Championship? And then, and actually for a point, it kind of was just back to that.
Yeah.
But he did manage to take that team, get them out of the Championship, and then perform at a pretty astonishing level for most of the season. What I would say about Neil Lennon, though, was he a really good manager? Or did he just have the biggest anomalous Scottish talent in the like blossoming in the middle of midfield? You could argue maybe even now a sort of £100 million midfielder in the middle of the park.
I think he was certainly
by the way, makes every team that he's in better. St Mirren won cups, Hibs won cups, Scotland started qualifying for tournaments. Now Aston Villa are on the brink of qualifying for Champions League. So maybe just having John McGinn in your team makes everything all right.
Leo Lennon certainly benefited from coming in at a good time. Maybe some of the managers we mentioned previously are certainly added benefit, didn't have that luxury. I think it was also a bit of a statement at the time, you know, Gordon getting Neil Lennon to manage in the Championship.
Yeah, it was.
I think I remember it being like, oh, right, okay. But, you know, it was, I just edged him just ahead of McLeish, but I'm sure Liam will tell me much later on why that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was quite wrong, but we'll just move on for that. I don't actually have Neil Lennon in my top five, and I didn't do it really to be controversial, but I just, I felt like, to be honest, the Championship season was a slog. We got over the line, and whilst that second half of the second season was good, I think it was just too short a period to have it in there. I've got someone who's going to annoy people on Twitter as my fourth. I've gone for Jack Ross as the fourth best in my lifetime.
The ASOS
Ancelotti, as you like to call him. I think he's a victim of bad timing and COVID. I think we instantly improved when he came in. Not enough, obviously, to get that top six finish in the first season, but who cares, because it was a fucking COVID interrupted season. He didn't get any of the games anyway. And then the COVID season, we saw three forward players get 50-odd goals between them. The likes of that's never been seen for a very long time.
It's COVID ball. It was COVID ball, pal.
Mate, it still fucking counts, right? It still goes into the record books. I know there's an asterisk, but it still counts for something. For me, I think he was very unlucky with the European circumstance as well. I think the second leg against Rijeka, he was majorly hamstrung by our lack of activity in the summer, and I think had circumstances been different, I think we'd have got through that. And I think with his pragmatism, I think we would have got results in Europe and probably got somewhere close to potentially group stage football. I think just a real victim of circumstance, and a victim of not being backed in the way that managers following him have been backed. which is unfortunate. So that's why I've got him number four.
Well, Jack, I'll just come in here, Harry, and let you know that Jack Ross is my number three.
Chris, have you got Jack Ross on your list?
No, I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
Well, Chris, I think you're going to hate me because I've got him even higher than Ewan does, unfortunately.
Fucking hell, Jesus Christ. Do you know what? Maybe I'm slightly clouded by the hearing things from pals that work in Scottish football and stuff that my understanding and what I was led to believe by them is that Ross was a little bit, wanted to be a little bit like Alex Ferguson or one of those managers who controls absolutely everything at the club, and Hibs were unwilling to hand him that power. My understanding was that Ross and Matthew didn't really get on. I think there was a bit of a power struggle there, which ultimately I think kind of led to Matthew leaving. So as pragmatic and as good a man manager as Jack Ross was, I don't think everything was quite as progressive behind the scenes, I would say. Again, I've got no evidence of this. All I've got is like some things that I've heard about how when Matthew left, Jack Ross was apparently saying that he didn't want anyone to replace him in that role. He wanted to do it as well. And that's a big red flag for me.
Like Lee Johnson did.
Yeah. Well,
I suppose I suppose there's maybe some evidence to that when you look at the roles he's sort of carried out since then, but and the roles he carried out before that, was it? It was PFA or something like that. But yeah. I think Jack Ross is a massive victim of COVID ball, personally. I think we talk about football and style of play and stuff, and we've all done it, and fuck, I probably done it in that run. Actually, do you know what? I hold my hands up. We put out I done something incredibly stupid in the early days of this podcast on Twitter, and you know, you're emotive at the time and you're steaming and, you know, you're sitting in your house with nothing to distract you. And Twitter is a great place to vent. And I decided the podcast page was a better thing and said he should have been sacked on the spot after St. Johnstone semi-final. Like, but you didn't get three players combining to score over 50 goals if you're not a good attacking team. He had a competent defence. And look, is it...
You do if the pressure's off.
But the pressure's off for everyone, though, and the other teams couldn't achieve that.
There was a team that went unbeaten in that season. Obviously, you know, like so, and
able to do it when the pressure's off.
No, totally, yeah. And maybe there is an element of that, but I think he got a lot out of a team that, you know, Alex Gogic had a good season. He got a lot out of Kevin Nisbet that season. He got Christian Deutsch probably had his best spell at the club. Josh Doig into the team, and I think he was probably the person that done the most for Ryan Porteous's career at Hibs in terms of, maybe that was more to do with fitness. Maybe if he'd been fit, he would have played more under Neil Lennon. But obviously the big game thing hangs around him. Of course it does, and maybe rightly so, but I had him above Lennon for the fact he got there. I know that's not the right way to go, but Lennon got to a couple of semi-finals and got beat. Jack Ross still won, you know, a semi-final or two, and obviously never got the chance to manage the final on the second one, so you'll never know there. But yeah, just gets the edge for Lennon over me. It was also third, you know, not fourth, it was third.
I think as well, the longer we are an unserious football club for, and the longer that we continue to be,
the better,
quite frankly,
looks
abject, the better he looks. And I think that is another, so that's maybe a positive for him in terms of the timing. But I do think ultimately, if you look at it, he came in during that period where both Hibs and Hearts are scrambling around looking for a manager for ages, particularly Hearts. And we appointed a guy who was competent, which meant that we didn't get relegated. And our Edinburgh rivals ultimately didn't appoint someone who was competent and were relegated.
I still managed to take a dullion off them at Easter Road, though, before they did get relegated, didn't they?
He did. But that's what ultimately, I said earlier, it was inconsequential in terms of the season. So,
what would I actually say if we could have just beat them that night? We could have got them relegated and finished sixth.
I didn't have Jack Ross in my top five at all. I just don't think it. I didn't have him in the bottom five. I know I'm in the top five. I just think that sums up his tenure at Hibs quite quite well. It wasn't in the I just struggle to take the COVID ball season too seriously. Hearts winning the league, nobody's at the games. It just it has so many asterisks that it's almost not worth considering.
who have you got number three then, Chris?
Number three, I've got McLeish. I've got McLeish. I know he did kind of a lot of the kind of good work in the late 90s, like we're getting kind of Sozzi and Latapy in and stuff. But the team that got to the Scottish Cup final was probably my first team that I got to watch that you know, the team kind of picked itself. Like you knew who the 11 were, and they were great players, and it was so it was a really kind of proud, like, fond memory of mine was that McLeish team and getting to the cup final in 2001. I cried after it. I cried after the cup final. Even got absolutely hammered by Celtic. But I thought and like finished third and stuff. I thought he was. I just really liked that team. Really liked it. It was the first Hibs team that I truly kind of fell in love with, I think. Like, I obviously watched the stuff in the 90s and that, but I was very young then. So that was the first one where I was like, I like this.
See, the context of that, Chris, like, where would the back end that he got to obviously bring in players that had won Champions Leagues and stuff? Like, how does that, you know, we talk about managers getting backed now.
Yeah.
Where obviously there was more money in the Scottish game then.
Yeah, it was the Sky like money,
what,
wasn't it?
Like
just,
what? Like, did we
it just
like,
all gone mad?
But like, were we clearly the third biggest spenders then,
no,
or were we still sort of fifth like
not.
We are now?
No.
Or
no,
like,
absolutely no. Not. It's a team that you had individuals who were on big wages, but it was a team that was augmented by a lot of solid Scottish pros, guys like Gary Smith, who would not have been on commanding big money, John O'Neill. It wasn't a team, it wasn't like an all-stars 11. He bought well. He used guys like Ian Murray and Tam McManus, who would have been on youth team contracts. I think Tom Smith probably played quite a lot of that season down the left-hand side. Grant Brebner, who wasn't his signing, I don't think, but had been around for a while. He did use the Scottish market. It's not like it was just that the ones that he did spend money on, he went to town on, your Sozzi's, your Latapy's. I would imagine David Zatelli would have been quite a high earner.
Dirk Layman, he'd have been on money, or
I think he was a bit of a journeyman, Dirk Layman, really, wasn't he? I don't think he went to Motherwell after us, so I wouldn't imagine he was commanding mega dough, but he just spent it well. Ulrik Larsson, what a pickup he was.
Yeah,
on the club in Denmark.
Did he agat?
For about five minutes.
I mean, that one fell in his lap, to be fair. But
guys like Stuart Lovell, Paul Fenwick as well, like they were I mean Stuart Lovell was a good player. Paul Fenwick, you wouldn't ever say was like a fantastic player, but just played really well in that team because that team just fitted together so well.
Totally.
And like I say, it was one of those teams where it picked itself. You kind of went to the game and you knew who was going to be playing, and you knew who, like, you knew what shape they were going to be, the kind of three at the back, where with Sozzi as a sweeper, and it was really the first time where we won a lot of games, I think, and we're just really good.
Harry, I know, sorry, you maybe want to move on, and Liam, I know you'll probably come on to talk about him in a bit as well, but like, so see the cup final against Celtic, that's one of my earliest memories of a football game. But see, like, the expectation, or probably the earliest, actually, but what would have been the expectation there? Because we've got a really good team. We're finishing third. There's obviously Latapy's got his issues, but that's probably the start or right in the middle of like that fantastic Celtic team that ended up going to the UEFA Cup final. Like, would the fan base have expected to compete in that game, or was it like what happened was sort of what expect? You know what I mean? Like, what was the expectation level, and was it seen as like a little bit of an underperformance on the day, or?
I don't know. I've never really kind of thought about it all that much. Possibly a little bit of an underperformance, but I don't really think anybody held out much hope for us, because that Martin O'Neill team was really good, wasn't it?
It was ridiculous. Like, it was so good. It was, and so we'd finished the season with a bit of a whimper as well, which is the important thing. I think we only lost maybe two of our first 25 or two of our first 26 games or something ridiculous like that. And we were, at one point there was talk of us challenging for the title, which seemed ridiculous, but we were second place pretty consistently for a long time, and then we fell off. And we had a bad end to the season. We just sort of limped over the line. I think expectations were very low. I think everyone knew how good that O'Neill team was, to be honest.
I think there was a bit of frustration on the day because, like, did Jackie McNamara not score?
I think
And
so.
there was a wee bit like we maybe could have like defended, like, why is he scoring? Do you know what I
Maybe
mean? We could
a
maybe
bit.
could have done a bit better in those individual situations, but overall, like Liam said, I don't think there was a huge expectation. I've certainly gone to finals since with more expectation.
Maybe a bit similar when we lost to
Come away with the
Celtic
same
under
result, fair
Fenlon.
enough. But...
Maybe the same sort of vibe as the Fenlon final against them. Obviously, we were a lot worse and Celtic weren't as good, but I certainly came away for that game going, yeah, like what you gonna do? We're seventh, they just won the league. Sorry, Harry. Anyway.
That's okay. So just to confirm, is everybody given their three apart from myself then?
Think so, I.
Cool. Well, I'm going to be the first of the four of us to say them. The man who I would say overall made me fall in love with football, to be honest, Tony Mowbray. I know you guys are unhappy that I've got him this low. I love Tony Mowbray and the brand of football that he brought in. It was entertaining. Like, you know, when people talk about like the Hibs way, and like it definitely doesn't. It's not managed to happen in the last like six managers, but Tony Mowbray definitely encapsulated that. The players that we had whilst he was there. It's always difficult because nowadays it's kind of known that like recruitment isn't just on the manager, whereas back in those days it was a bit more of a like gray area as to how much impact he had, but it was just a joy to watch. And obviously the like ground he set then ended up winning us the cup next year with John Collins. So yeah, I just loved Tony Mowbray. I'll let you guys have got him
Didn't
higher
he
than
love him
me,
that
so
much? Had him fucking third. So
but
that's
I've got to yeah.
I've got Alan Stubbs third. I've forgotten to give my third one. I know he'll be
Awesome.
featuring higher up some of people's lists, but I gave Alan Stubbs third. Tony Mowbray features much higher in my list. I think we should leave Tony Mowbray to the end.
Yeah, that is fine by
Yeah,
me.
yeah.
And then I'll kick off because we've mentioned him already. I've got Jack Ross at number two, and let me justify.
That is some
All right,
shout, by the way.
so that's
Fucking
quite
hell.
that's wild, Harry.
Listen. The worst rule in European football, the fact that the Scottish Cup winners who need to win six games get group stage football over a team that's done it over 38 games. We weren't just the bit like we were comfortably the third best team, and if he was given a left-sided centre back that was competent and could have started for Hibs, he would still be manager right now. Recruitment has never shafted a Hibs manager more than it shafted Jack Ross. He helped build the team and helped the team develop to the stage that we were consistently beating everybody in the bottom six. I can't think, like, obviously there was a frustrating games against Celtic, Rangers, Hearts. I can't think of any, like, well, obviously there was some in the January, but he was just consistently beating the teams we need to beat. Like, see Wee Lee Johnson, the reason that he failed was just because we would shit the bed so often. We'd be flying, then we'd shit the bed randomly. Whereas with Jack Ross, it was consistency. And we won football games. Like, of all the managers we've mentioned, like, Jack Ross was just a winner when he was at Hibs. I know we didn't win cup finals. That was the thing that he was hated for. I would love to hate the current Hibs manager for getting to cup finals and not winning them. That'd be great. Imagine we had got a good days out at Hampden and stuff.
Well,
Imagine Hibs finishing third in the table.
we
Be
got beat at
magic.
Hampden. We got beat at Hampden in November, if you're into that type of thing.
I know, and then that was the League Cup, no, the Scottish Cup. Eh? He'd done them both in the same season. I
Yeah.
think that Jack Ross, with better
I know, we
recruitment,
all
should have
watched it
been
on
completely
TV.
fine. Yeah, that and that's the thing as
Hey,
well. Like,
we did have a
you're
good
saying that there was
one.
no pressure and stuff, but like, if we were at those games, those would be like class memories. Like Stevie Mallon last minute away to St Mirren, the 4-0
St
win away to
Johnstone.
Motherwell, Boyd's screamer away to Aberdeen. Like, we had so many really cool and like exciting moments. And then even like the Livingston game, 4-1, second day of the season, like really exciting, fun games. And like, we didn't get to experience it. And I think if we were there, I think that he would comfortably be in like most current Hibs fans' top fives. But obviously, as you say, Chris, it might be the case that if we were there, we would have shat the bed the whole season.
Well, that's
But
my argument is that if the question that I would ask about the COVID ball season, if we were there, would it have gone down like it did? Because I don't think we can understate how much playing in empty stadiums is different from playing in stadiums that have thousands and thousands of supporters voicing opinions, singing songs, creating an atmosphere. I really think it was a completely different game. And I mean, results kind of around almost the world, I think, kind of reflect that. A lot of weird things happened in COVID ball, and yeah, I would certainly struggle to have Jack Ross that high on my list.
I'd say I wouldn't have him in the top two, but I did have him third. But I think looking back on it, like when we talk about pressure and stuff, we only came from behind once that season still. You know, it's not like we were scoring goals early and seeing teams off sort of late. And I actually think our away record, for at least for a large chunk of the season, was better than our record at Easter Road. I still think we dropped stupid points at Easter Road, which I don't know where that ties into the pressure thing, you know. Easier to go on the road, but then you're playing in front of smaller crowds and stuff. But Harry, that's a big statement to have him above Tony Mowbray, and I would struggle to get on board with that, mainly because, I mean, Mowbray done it for two seasons for a start, you know, playing back to back with a very exciting team. But then did Tony Mowbray just benefit from having all the players like what Neil Lennon did, Chris, with John McGinn?
Yeah, it's true.
I think Tony Mowbray has proven.
No, I know.
Virtually
I know,
every
I know,
football
I know.
Club, apart from Celtic, that he's been at, his credentials as a manager. And I think that we're talking about house managers here, so you're not necessarily applying all of that context to all of them. I mean, the reason that I had Stubbs third, maybe not first or second, is because, frankly, I don't actually think he was that good a manager based on what else he's done in the game since then. And I don't think it's unfair to look at that context. But I do think with Jack Ross in particular, yes, I think the time and the element's important, but I think also the thing that takes away from that, the fans never really took to him because of the big game. Ultimately, the outcomes of more big games than most. I mean, there were some good results in there. You know, obviously Aberdeen away to finish to secure third place, the Dundee United semi-final. There were some good results in there, but ultimately he didn't win enough big games, and that's why he probably wouldn't feature in some people's top five.
Yeah, I think there was a triangulation as well. I think he seemed like a bit of a like a guy who's really into self-preserving his reputation, his relationship with the media, his relationship with other clubs, even. I remember when Poitras got sent off at Ibrox, and it was a tackle. You say it was a red, you can say it
wasn't
was
a red.
Whatever. I don't think it was.
Was arguing with a Rangers fan about that today.
But the thing is, the Hibs manager should be coming out after the game and saying that is not a red card. He should be backing the players 100%. And Ross, I remember, said to BBC Sport, "Oh, well, I can see why he's given it." And you shouldn't be talking like that. You shouldn't be talking like that. And Neil Lennon wouldn't talk like that. And other managers that we've had wouldn't talk like that. I think it was really poor. And that it was around that time where I was like, nah, I just can't stick this
it's
guy.
It's funny, that is actually where it started to fall apart for him. Yeah. Because that is, see, before Poitras got set off, we were top of the league.
Yeah.
Like, we were winning at Ibrox to go top of the league, and it crumbled from there. And it probably...
But then about
that can turn a fan base, you know. Like, and definitely. We were back in the ground at that point, and it did get bad, you know. And like, I'm not saying that losing Ryan Poitras for, I'm guessing, three games, maybe probably two, like, but it did get bad, and there was circumstances. Well, Kyle McGinnis got his first of a few injuries, which was obviously unfortunate, but. Yeah, he certainly didn't endear himself, did he, to the fan base with his interviews and stuff.
But this is what management is. This is what management is. It's about as much as about coaching players and getting teams on the park. It's about creating narratives around your team in the media as well. And it's not just about preserving your own career so that you don't annoy anybody throughout the game. It's about, you know, if you come out and say, if you stand in front of BBC and say that's never a red card, it's not a sending off, I can't believe that's happened, then that carries on and that becomes a thing, being like, you know, our referee's unfair to Ryan Poitras. And then you start to get decisions, or you can start to get decisions in your favour. And that's 100% what you should be doing in that situation. Not just sort of going like, oh, well, I can see both sides. I think that's terrible management.
Right. I mean, to be fair, talking about self-preservation, there was some pundits that were still tipping him to get the Aberdeen job when two of his most recent games in management, he got beat 9-0 and 7-0.
One last one on Jack Ross, and then we'll move on to managers that we're
trying to get you on there.
More easily agreeable on. As I said earlier, and I stick by it, I think from the position that we were in, I don't think that we've given a manager that deserved the good transfer window a worse transfer window. I think that the lack of action that then caused panic signings that resulted in James Scott accidentally scoring a hat-trick on the last day of the season. And to this day, we still need the centre-back that Jack Ross said openly in front of media he needed, and we've still not signed him. And for me, that like the reason that he's so high for me is because I think there was potential there for him to be Hibs manager until a better team came in and snapped him up, and I don't think we've had that opportunity for a very, very long time, and we ruined it for ourselves. But we can argue that till we're blue in the face. Who's not said their two yet?
Me.
You and you, Krakow.
I've got Tony Mowbray, number two. It was a toss of a coin. Now, which obviously, look, that means that Alan Stubbs is my number one. I've not mentioned Stubbs. And maybe it'll be make more sense to say why I put Stubbs above Mowbray. I've said on numerous times on this podcast that I would exchange any league position for Hibs to win trophies. And that's the contradiction that I said for not putting John Collins in my top five. So, simply, the manager that gave me, well, I'm not a kid yet, so I think I'm safe to say best day of my life deserves to be number one. You know, like, and that's like, as a football fan, I will forever be willing to accept shite league finishes if Hibs win trophies. It's like what we said about the Kilmarnock game that day as well. Like, they live fond in the memory, and they do live fonder in the memory than anything that I remember from being that little bit younger with Tony Mowbray. It just does, you know, like, and Tony Mowbray was fantastic. Totally made me full on become obsessed with Hibs and football in general, but I cannot not put Alan Stubbs at number one purely for me as best manager, because he was the manager that provided me with the single best day of supporting and following football.
Cool. Yeah. I like that format of doing two and one at the same time. Liam, you can do your top two.
I think my two are probably pretty predictable. I've got Alex McLeish number two, and I have Tony Mowbray number one. Tony Mowbray, I wasn't going every week at that point, but I was going fairly regularly, and it just probably was the best period I've had supporting Hibs, and it's as simple as that. I have never identified with a team more than watching a young group of homegrown players come through at the same time, play what was at times swashbuckling, at times also absolutely nonsensical shit the bed football. There were some horrors in there. The 4-4 against Dundee, for example.
Is that his first game?
Not his first game. No.
Or did we lose to Dundee
first season?
We lose at home in his first game.
I don't remember the first game. We didn't get off to a good start, I know that. But it was just a really good period following the club. And ultimately he kind of put the foundations in place to build the infrastructure that's there. I know it's not particularly exciting. I think the only real blot in his copybook is, and there's a couple, but I suppose the major one for me is the Dundee United semi-final, because I went to that game with full of expectation and we didn't deliver. And then there's another semi-final that I'd rather not talk about as well, but I think he was slightly hamstrung by the circumstances around that, in all honesty. He for a manager when he came in, I think I'll be honest, and my expectations were probably quite low when he came in. He absolutely way overachieved those low expectations. And it just was a really good time, really good vibes, like, for the couple of years he was there.
Well, I've got Stubbs second and Mowbray first. Is that what you had, Liam?
McLeish
and Mowbray. I think we've kind of spoke about Stubbs already, but I agree with you and that when a manager kind of gives you a moment like that, something that you've wanted since you started supporting Hibs, you kind of owe him quite a lot, I think. again, he benefited from having probably the most prodigious Scottish talent of the last 30 years in the midfield, but he did it. So I like Alan Stubbs. So he was second, and much the same as Liam, Tony Mowbray first. I think when he first came in, Mowbray, he actually spoke a little bit how Lee Johnson spoke, a very like, I don't know, very like metaphorical. And he wanted to get behind the player's eyes and find out and find out what's going on. He wants to get to know them as people and stuff. And that can there was a wee bit when he came in, I was like, firstly, who is this guy? Because I'm only just like what, still quite young. And I was like, he's speaking a wee bit weird, but he really did back it up. And like Liam says, like all the jobs he's done in football since, and how he's kind of the regard he's held in throughout football. Basically anywhere you go and ask about Tony Mowbray, people will just say he's a legend. I think you're right in what you say about he maybe benefited from having the golden generation at his
Oh, I
disposal.
was
But
being total devil's advocate there.
but he did also utilize him. It's a shame he never actually won anything, but the way that he where we'd come from, I think we'd had McLeish and then it kind of went to shit and then Mowbray came in. I always remember for some reason when he came in there was all this talk about how little money he was getting paid. He was like on 45 grand a year.
Oh, but then,
Wild.
geez,
Yeah,
Eddie.
I know. It seems like a lot. It's a long time ago now, but believe me, at the time it was like manager's only getting like 45 grand a year. So he must have been something of a punt, like a kind of
Well, it was
cheap
his first
option, I
job, wasn't
guess.
it?
Yeah, it was.
He,
He's, he came from he come from Ipswich, is
Ipswich.
that right? Yeah, he was like a youth coach at Ipswich or something.
It's
But yeah, I think and as well, just like to have all those young kind of a lot of like firecracker talents in there. And then he kind of played this very like patriarchal kind of fatherly role with them. I think it just was a nice match, and it was just good vibes. I was talking about how Calderwood's games always took place in the winter. It felt like Mowbray's games always took place short sleeve summer, sun beating down. I don't
with
know.
the
It's
teenage kicks by the underclass
yeah,
playing,
yeah, exactly,
yes,
exactly.
that song is still like in my like football Hibs sort of playlist, like driving Easter Road or whatever. And that is, I'm sure you guys all have the same. Like that is Hibs for me. You know that is what that. And I know I've put Stubbs above him, but it is for that one reason. It is for a single game, but like that
It's
is
that and
Hibs.
I Can Feel It by the Silencers, like
Yeah.
those two songs both.
Oh,
It's just, I'm just like, it's just good vibes, man. Good
Yeah,
times.
definitely,
It's
definitely,
just so
and
exciting.
it's a real shame that we weren't able to build on some of the foundations that Mowbray made, and then he could really be kind of revered as like a Hibs legend. Because I remember when there was talk about getting the director of football and stuff, I was like, oh, please get him back. Please get him back as like director of football. Doesn't need to do the tactical stuff anymore, doesn't need the day-to-day, but just have him there. That would have been so good. But just a legend who as I was coming of age, he was the Hibs manager, and we had a really good team and we won a lot of games. And it, like Liam says, it was just fucking good vibes, man.
Well, let
And
me
I'm
read this. Statistically, he did
yeah. Sorry to take us back.
that. My number one was Alan Stubbs. Similar to what you guys said, obviously, like growing up, if like until 2016, if someone said to you, "What do you want to do before you die?" Every single person that was a passionate Hibs fan would have said, "See Hibs win the Scottish Cup." And I don't know if you guys have read his biography, or autobiography. I can't remember which one. But essentially, in it, there's a story of like after his second time with cancer, he came back and he scored at Easter Road. And then after he scored for Celtic at Easter Road, like Hibs fans clapped, and he was like, "One day, I want to like give that club something as a thanks." And I was like,
Birthday
you know, I love
card
a story,
pish.
eh?
I don't know if I'll say
I
birthday
think,
card
yeah,
pish.
I think it's classy.
Does kind of sound like birthday card pish, I'm afraid to say.
I think it's class. But the thing is, for me, like, you know, when someone you just adore someone, like, see if someone says to me, "Oh, if you could like have a dinner party with anybody dead or alive ever," I always say Alan Stubbsy. I just love him. I've never loved, apart from maybe Effie Ambrose, I've never loved a Hibs related person more than Alan Stubbs. And we could win Champions Leagues, and I think Stubbsy would still be top of my Hibs manager list. I just think he's fucking class.
It's interesting. So sorry, it's interesting that I was going to say the unanimous top two there, but I know Liam had McLeish, and I think McLeish had only maybe
After
had
Jack Rawson for a laugh as
one.
well.
Oh, you know, wanky. I know, well, even, I know Jack Ross had more experience, but You've ruined this, Harry. No, like, but Mowbray and Stubbs, it's their first job. McLeish only had, am I right? Did he only have like a year under his belt at Motherwell before he came to Hibs? Like, interesting. They are the two like sort of standouts probably when you go straight to this. I'd imagine they were guaranteed to be in your top five. You know, there's no discussion point that. And then, but if Hibs were to go out and hire someone like say Montgomery did leave this summer, you know, like Hibs were to go and appoint a rookie like that, I think everyone would be like, what the fuck is, like, where's the ambition coming for, like...
Sean Maloney.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah, and we binned him 3 months later. I don't know. I just find it interesting that they were both lacking in experience, if you like, and provided some of our best days.
I think, if anything, what kind of talking about this stuff proves is that appointing football managers is fucking hard, and there's a huge element of luck. Timing is so important, but there's so much unknowable stuff that you only find out after the person's really appointed. And you know, we are kind of quick to, maybe not quick, but we do all blame the higher ups for the situation, and when it comes to bad appointments, just as we did with Petrie. But I think there's a huge element of luck. I mean, I think when you look at the elite teams, the big teams in the world, I mean, when they can't even get it right with all the money in the world, then realize that it's maybe not fucking easy.
But with your point earlier on about the golden generation, maybe wouldn't have been the golden generation if you'd swapped Ryder and Whitaker for Bobby Mann and a bag of balls. Like, it maybe wouldn't have worked out that way. It maybe if you'd had a manager who didn't know and hadn't spent time as Mowbray had done at Ipswich working with young players, he might not have played. Those players might not have shone. They might not have come through. If you didn't go out and sign guys like Ian Boozlin and David Murphy to come in and compliment it,
Sprewell goes off, maybe
wouldn't have been the best Hibs manager of the 21st century, which he definitively is. So I think that's the case made for it, Harry. Tony Mowbray, numero uno.
And your very biased opinion, me and you, and we'll stick with Stubbsy. Nah, that's definitely a fair point. And then just food for thought, I think the only managers that we didn't mention that didn't get into any of our top fives or bottom fives, understandably Nick Montgomery, not really long enough. John Hughes never made either the top five or bottom five. That pretty understandable.
Anyway, the start of his first season was a lot of fun, but from the moment we scored after 12 seconds against Rangers, it all went to shit.
Were we not unbeaten against like the entire league at one point?
We
had gone like 11 games unbeaten.
We went to Ibrox, was that the game with David Murphy? We went to Ibrox. We won 1-0.
No, that was under Collins.
That was under Collins.
But when Zimama's like sent it, we got goal of the season. Stokes is like chipped McGregor on the volley. A funny story about this, I think I've probably said this before, but my granddad swears by it. Hibs, before that Rangers game, it must have been Christmas time, Hibs were on Football Focus and they were asking if Hibs could split the Old Firm, and John and my granddad swears by it. As soon as Hibs got any sort of national coverage, he was like, that's when the arse fell out of it. And it did. It really did. Like, he swears by it. But John Hughes, that period up to that point was very, very fun. Like, and you're talking about 4-2-4. That was fucking 4-2-4.
But then after that, I couldn't fucking buy a win.
Fucking 6-6 and then a last day win at Dundee United to scrape fourth. Fucking hell. Oh, jeez.
The last manager we couldn't, unfortunately, I hate to have to mention him, Frank Sozzi. I think it's fair to say didn't have a fair shake of the stick. So
sample size,
and also I think there was just an acceptance from all parties, including him, that he just wasn't cut out for it. So I think when you realise something like that and you just kind of scuttle off a wee bit, then it's kind of like, right, okay, you've done almost a decent thing really, and just gone, this isn't for me. Everyone kind of knows you're a legend player. The management thing's not going to work out. See you later. You can't really have him in like a bottom five list or anything.
Especially when he's not went on to do anything else in that scene. You know, he's not even tried it elsewhere, has he?
Just wasn't for him. Just went, you know what? Don't fancy this.
So obviously Chris went with Maloney, who had slightly longer, but Maloney obviously fancies it. You know, he had all the coaching before it. He's now at Wigan. So it is actually looking at his time with Hibs being like, eh? Like, that is bad.
All right, boys, just for the people listening, I'd said to the guys, all right, I've got this and this if we need to extend this beyond half an hour. And then the guy's like, no, I think we'll be fine. And we are an hour and a half later. And yeah, I think it goes to show that people like negatives more than positives, because we definitely rattled off the negativity more than the positivity.
Just more to talk about.
Just more of it, isn't yeah, it?
Definitely true. But Chris, thanks as always for joining us. Much appreciated.
No
Liam,
problem, Ewan,
thanks again.
Thank you.
And everybody, let us know who you think's list was best, worst, and who you would have in your top five and bottom five. And we will catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Cheers. Thank you.